What drove you to run for president, Angus?
Well, it's kind of my mantra, my theme this year is, why not me? Why not now? And I was kind of my thing. I'm thinking, well, if somebody's going to make a change and want to make a commitment and stuff, why not Bob? Why not now?
I'm Joe C. Mandel, and welcome to Raven Conversations. Today, I'm joined by someone who should not be a total stranger to anybody who's ever served a day in the Washington National Guard. Part of our series of bringing in former guardsmen who've retired and gone on to do amazing things. Sergeant Major retired Bob Sweeney is here joining us to talk about his career. And now he is the Angus president, and talk about Angus and what they're doing for the Guard. So thanks for joining us, Bob.
Well, I appreciate the honor. It's quite an honor to be here back in this building again after many years and that stuff going.
Yeah. Through, so. I mean, when was the last time you worked in this building?
Well, 2013, my retirement year, May of 2013, when I left as a state senior enlisted leader, the day they took my CAT card away and all that stuff, and had to knock on the front door to actually get into this building.
Yeah, but you've always been around, which is great, so, and I love that you've always kind of been part of the Guard family. For those that don't know, kind of intro and background on yourself.
Well, going through, I think I enlisted in the regular Army back in 1976. Way back then, and going through there, served in the 1st Armored Division in West Germany before the wall came down. And spent my service over there. Got out in 1980 because I was a Massachusetts boy. So I came back, went back home to where the family was. And a year later, I was lonesome and missed the military lifestyle and that stuff. And I actually, that time, joined the Massachusetts National Guard. So, and as an engineer, I was a combat engineer and stuff going through there. So I joined the 101st Engineer Battalion, which traces its history back to 1636. We are the nation's oldest military. And we celebrated that history all the time and that stuff going through there, and loved my assignment out there and stuff going out there. And in 1983, we had this new program called AGR. Mm-hmm. We were going through there. That's when it was born and that stuff going through there. Because back in those days, all our units were manned by technicians and going through there, dual status technicians. But they came up with this AGR program, and I was an ops guy in the regular Army in the Guard. And they said, hey, want to apply for this job? We don't know what it's really going to be like. We don't know what the AGR program really is and that stuff. So I did. In 1983, I became back on AGR and that stuff going through there as an E5. Worked my way up to E8 before I left the state of Massachusetts for Washington. So I worked my way back up to be a battalion operations guy and first sergeant back there in the days and that stuff. One of the youngest E8s stuff at that time because I was 28 when I made E8 and stuff going through some things of that nature. But then the first Gulf War came around. And stuff going through there. The unit didn't deploy. It was called up, but we didn't deploy. But after that war and that stuff going through there, the Army decided we didn't need this big standing army of National Guard, which was almost 500,000 at the time, 14 divisions and that stuff going away. So our division got axed in the redesign and that stuff of the military, because at the time we were shifting things from, at that time, Army Reserve and the Army National Guard both have combat mission rules and that stuff going out there. So at that time, the decision was made that the Army Reserve would become the combat support of the Army, and the Army Guard would become the combat units and that stuff going through there, but we didn't need the division. So I was in the 26th Division, the Yankee Division stuff going through. That went away. That became a brigade. Being part of the nation's oldest and that stuff, the military and the Army, the Guard was not going to give up all that lineage and that stuff. My battalion was going to stay, but they said, but Bob, you don't get to keep your job. We're going to give your job to somebody else. So at that time and stuff going through there, the history of Washington Guard stuff came into play and that stuff, because we had the 81st Brigade. And at that time, we had a thing called the Enhanced Brigades. Mm-hmm. And the Enhanced Brigades were mini divisions at the time and that stuff, commanded by one star, and they were self-sustaining with everything. And at that time, though, they were standing up the E Brigade, the 81st Brigade did not have an engineer battalion. They had an engineer company up in Anacortes and Bellingham and that stuff, and they were standing up a new battalion, and they needed some engineers to come out and actually build this battalion. And I was offered an opportunity to come out here and stuff, but I was in E8 in a control grade and all that stuff and wanted to do some things. And I didn't want to give up my E8, of course, and that stuff going through at the time and going through there. So actually, there were some old people around and that stuff that people might remember, like Ron Caprell and stuff, mm-hmm. was a captain at the time. He was one of the AOs and that stuff, came out and convinced, along with Oscar Hillman, convinced Bureau and Washington to transfer my control grade out here for 2 years. And I got transferred out to Anacortes to build a brand new battalion up and stuff going through there. So that was like April of 1993 when that offer was made. And I didn't. And by 1st of July, I reported out here. The family stayed home in Massachusetts, my wife and son, because we had home and property back there and that stuff. But it's a move I never regret and stuff moving forward. You take those risks and that stuff there. But I think it paid out pretty well for me in my career and that stuff going through there. So so I became an engineer and helped form up the 898 Engineer Battalion.
Yeah, and then you moved on to become the 81st Brigade CSM and eventually the State Sergeant Major.
And did a lot of great things and stuff. I think a great accomplishment, I think, was back in the day was being the 205th RTI CSM, because back then we were in charge of NCOs education, everything west of the Mississippi. So I had 15 different schoolhouses, regular Army, Army Reserve, and Guard schoolhouses, all the way from, like I said, the Mississippi all the way to Guam and Alaska and stuff. So that enlightening assignment, you know, working with TRADOC, working with the United States Sergeant Major's Academy and all those type of things was a very broadening assignment and that stuff going through there and did a lot of great things for me at that time stuff too. So going through there. But, you know, I first came to work in this building, Building 1 in 1997. So in going through that piece, that's when I came on to Camp Murray. And from 1997 till I retired, I had an AGR job on Camp Murray the entire time.
Yeah. So kind of just one of those questions you got to think back. How did you learn about the Guard?
Well, you know, it wasn't but back and then, of course, you know, you didn't see it on TV and doing a thing. It was just like kind of like driving down the street one day. I was looking at some things and I saw this armory over there and somebody, you know, I didn't know anybody in the Guard and that stuff or any of those things and stuff. I just stopped in and walked in the building, knocked on the door. What goes on here? Because there was people in uniforms and that stuff and walking around. I said, what do you do?
Yeah,
on a weekend and stuff, and
just randomly into
walked
an
in and stuff going through there and knocked on the door.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, very long career, extremely storied in the Washington National Guard. Like I said, I think a lot of senior leaders still know you, having been in uniform. What are some of those just those distinct memories of serving in the Washington Guard?
Well, I think the Washington Guard. I think it's one of the most memorable things. I think it's when we first started actually doing wildland firefighting. You know, in 1995 and that stuff, when the first big fires hit and that stuff, the Washington Guard was only using support roles, traffic control points, doing support and that stuff going out there. And I was a first sergeant up in the B Company and up at the 898 and Anacortes and stuff going through there. And we started at that time and that stuff, we were starting to deploy little people and stuff out there, three or four people, because they were using our demolition skills. So we would airdrop our engineers and stuff into the backwoods up there, and we would do temporary fire breaks and that stuff by using 1-inch dead cord and doing that blasting and stuff for that fire and that stuff going through there. But lo and behold, that wasn't enough in that stuff. We were running out of firefighters and stuff. So Task Force King was formed up. The first Task Force for Wildland Firefighting was based on two of the 146 and the 898. So Task Force King had to be the battalion commander. Colonel King and that stuff out there, and we did the first wildland firefight and stuff out there, and in doing that piece of it, and going through some things, and you know, now it's history. Now it's kind of a normal thing for the Guard to do wildland firefighting, but I think Washington kind of broke the mold too, and putting guardsmen out in wildland firefighting.
Yeah, and you were the brigade commander brigade CSM, excuse me, during the second brigade deployment. Anything that kind of comes from that, I was not on that one. I was on the first one.
Well, because of course, you know, the great thing about it, we had an amazing team and that stuff going through there. And we had a lot of experienced people from the first mobilization. I think one of the little dark moments in that stuff going through there is that we were getting ready to mob and that stuff, and we didn't have enough people. On the books, you had enough people and that stuff, but we still were 500 people short because of medical reasons and stuff. One of the tougher decisions we had to make at that time with General Tony and myself and some other people was E5 and below, bringing them all to Yakima. If you've never deployed before, we had to bring you into a room and tell them, oh, by the way, you're unvoluntold. You're being transferred to the 81st Brigade and you're going on deployment. I mean, that was a pretty dark time for a lot of people because it caught a lot of people off guard and that stuff going through there. So you had people from Troop Command, Aviation, all those other MSCs out there supporting this effort and stuff going through there. And I got to tell you, they all did a great, fantastic job, though, I mean, going through there. So, I mean, that was tough telling them all then. And they had to go home and tell their families, what, I thought you were safe. No, you're going and stuff going through. So that was a tough one and that stuff for them. But they served well and that stuff going through there. I mean, the only efforts about that stuff, and the brigade got, we thought we were going to the Balad and that stuff. And as the brigade headquarters trained for that mission and stuff, and just couple of weeks prior for us pulling out, says, no, you're going to Ramadi, Iraq out in the West and working for the Marine Corps. We worked for 1st and 2nd MEF out there, and it was the greatest assignment we ever had working for them. Some great, great Marines and that stuff. You ever get an opportunity to work in that joint environment with them and stuff going through there. They didn't like listening to anybody in Baghdad and that stuff and MNCI headquarters and that stuff because we control our own destiny. So, yeah. And going through there, and they just rocked and rolled. So,
no,
it was great.
And so, been retired for a little over 10 years now. So for most people, they probably known you as the guy that works at the National Guard Association of Washington. Yeah. What else have you been doing since retirement?
Well, since retirement, I mean, the NGAW is the thing and that stuff. You don't think about what we do and that stuff and that role and that stuff. It's not managing a campground like some people might think that we do, but it's just a side hobby type thing that we do and that stuff going out there. But I think what draws you into that stuff is really the advocacy and legislative effort that we've done and forged here in NGAW in the last 10 years and that stuff. Because we've been a shaker down in Olympia and that stuff and working on all those legislative bills, testifying, working those coalitions, working the things behind the scenes that people don't get to see all the time when it comes to getting things passed and that stuff out there and working on that piece and building those relationships too and that stuff. So a sidebar of that too, I became more involved on the enlisted side with the national associations and that stuff going through there with Ingus and stuff going through. So I kind of worked as an area chair representing the Northwest and working on those issues. And lo and behold, came this past August and that stuff. I ran for president and got elected. So I don't know if it's condolences or not and that stuff going through and that thing and that those issues and stuff working on there. But our main effort and that stuff out there, when we think of the enlisted side and stuff going through there, we focus on the people and the families, those actions that needed to take them going and stuff. And we have our sister organization, NAUGUS, which I work very well, the National Guard Association of the United States, and we work hand-in-hand in that stuff on a lot of issues and stuff that we didn't do before in the past and that stuff. And I have a working relationship with that leadership because of my role as the executive director for NGAW, so it's easier for me to walk into this position and blend all that together for everybody and stuff on that piece and going through there. So, and we've got some heavy things that we're working on and that stuff going through there because we've changed over our office staff because we hired a diverse group because we brought people that probably didn't have military experience into our staff, but they have the experience on the Hill that we need. Before, we didn't do that. So the insights that we're getting to some of those things, is quite challenging but going through like an example and stuff, everybody's trying to work on the TRICARE for All and that stuff, and we're working on the NDA process and working on that stuff going through there. But because of our new legislative team and their connections and stuff right now, we actually had 2 weeks ago, I had a meeting inside the White House with White House staffers inside the White House and with the National Security Council to talk about TRICARE and what does it mean. And the National Security Council team was quite surprised in that stuff when I brought up the thing that this is actually not a benefit. This is a readiness issue. And I had to explain to them in simple terms, you take an Army Guard unit that's got 100 people deployable, probably only 75 are ready to go medically. And then I have to rob over here for this other unit to fill them back up to 100% because the Guard has to mob at 95% strength and that stuff going through. So they kind of opened their eyes and that stuff going through there. So we'll see where it goes and that stuff. But part of our insider thing is trying not work it as a Senate thing, but trying to get the next, whoever the administration is, they actually get the president to put it into his NDA budget requests and make it work that way. So I think it'll be a more effective challenge and stuff going through. There is an expensive bill, but we're actually showing them there's cost savings, actually.
Yeah, and it's a topic that I think gets brought up quite a bit, and that's that healthcare for guardsmen, not just, while serving in a federal capacity, but also in a state capacity.
Oh, yeah.
It's a twofold issue.
Right, and there's been discussion and that stuff nationwide and that stuff, how we're going to do things for state active duty benefits and trying to blend that, because when you see things from 54 states, territories and that stuff, nobody's doing it. Everybody has a different set of rules when it's doing that thing and challenging things. So one of the things we are trying to work on and that stuff, and we got a working group on it. So if you're on state active duty too and that stuff, at least here in the state of Washington, you get hurt. You only get L&I and those type of things, but going through there. But part of it is to see how we can do that and actually turn that time into retirement benefits on the federal side and that stuff, your guard time and stuff going through some things. So we're working on it, trying to get some traction on that stuff, on that piece of it too. But I think it's doable in that stuff because what it is, more the community is seeing how much the Guard is involved every day on their streets, in their communities. It's not like it was before and that stuff going through. through. I mean, everybody's involved. They're always out there. And prime example right now, how many Floridian guardsmen are out there getting ready to do that and doing those things and that stuff. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've always been a very busy guy, yeah. Right? I mean, you've always kind of had your hand doing a lot of stuff. What drove you to run for president, Angus?
Well, it's kind of my mantra, my theme this year and that stuff, last year and going through there, is I met with General Holkinson last year and that stuff, and as a speaker and doing some things, and it's a sidebar and stuff. And I've known him since he was a colonel, as a brigade guy in Oregon, and us with 81st and that stuff had a relation and doing some things. And he was talking to the things that, he brought up this book and that stuff, it called kind of like, why not me? Why not now? And I was kind of my thing. I'm thinking, well, if somebody's going to make a change and want to make a commitment and stuff, why not Bob? Why not now? So, So my theme for this year for the Angus going through, the theme through conference and all that stuff is why not Angus? Why not today? And stuff going through some things. So I think having the bandwidth, having the experience of being a senior enlisted leader, the experience of NGAW, walking the halls of Olympia, working that piece and testimony and the other things I've been experiencing that stuff going through there, I think it's time to pick up the game and that stuff. And I'm not a type of person that wants to complain and that stuff going through there. Even my military career, if I have a problem and they knock on the door of my boss and my leader out that stuff, I'm going to bring him a problem, but I'm also trying to bring him a solution at the same time. So I'm not going to complain about what's going out there if I'm not going to put my skin in the game and try and figure out what we need to do. So I'm going through there and one of the great things we've got going on the enlisted side and that stuff nationwide and stuff, we built this tremendous junior enlisted council. We've got this council of the E6s and below out there working in just about every state right now, and they're ready to take over the world type thing, right? And they want things now and that stuff, and putting the power of them together and that stuff going through there. So I think part of my skill set is not so much leading directly and that stuff, but managing those things, turning those people on, those committees and stuff, letting them, give them the bandwidth to run. And just give them that guidance and mentorship and go through there. Because I'd rather have them come to me and ask for forgiveness than permission to do something.
Yeah. Next Angus conference, where's that at?
It's a great, great stuff. The next couple of years, actually, we're going to be in Reno, Nevada at the Grand Sierra Resort, 11 through 14 August, and that stuff going through there. We've got a great thing. We run a great professional development program with the SCA and that stuff going out there for our E6 and below. That's expanding. We've got our Minuteman stage for that year going through. Columbia Southern University helped support that and bring guest speakers on professional development side on all sorts of aspects and that stuff. And the real kicker is in 2026, everybody are going to Daytona Beach. So we've got a lot of people already wanting to sign up for Daytona Beach and hang out on the beach because the conference will actually be on the beach and it's going to be helped sponsored by NASCAR.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah, so will there be rides around the track?
Yes, some of our events are going to be at that. They're actually out there and stuff. Our welcome night and stuff out there. So we're working on that. It's them to be in a prime sponsor and that stuff and getting out there. And it'll probably be my last gig as president. So I might be able to ride the pace car. I don't know. The starter car.
Yeah. So for the Washington Guardsmen, especially the enlisted folks that are watching, how do they get involved with Angus? How do they start that process?
Well, the real process and stuff is getting involved at your state level and stuff with your state association. The good thing about our association, we are a joint association of officer enlisted. Most people don't understand that and stuff going through there. And we have an equal say in everything we do and stuff out there. Right now, Fernando Garcia is our vice president right now, and that stuff going through there. And get involved, I think, showing up at a meeting, asking the questions and stuff, and come kick the tires and that stuff going out there and see what we're getting involved. Because you might have a passion for some things, right? There could be something you want to do and that stuff, or a benefit and that stuff. And I tell people then, how do we set our priorities even here at the association? Well, it all comes from the membership. Membership drives our priorities, what's important to them. And they bring those priorities to us. It's not Bob thinking back there in the thing, what do I think is good and that stuff going through there? Because I'm not serving anymore, right? And stuff going through there. But that's how we got free hunting licenses. That came from an individual in the group and that stuff, say we want free hunting licenses. And that was not supported by the governor and our military department and stuff out there and stuff going out there. So we're not lockstep and having to do that piece with them and stuff going out there. We can get our own bills and stuff out there. And we did it with that one. A lot of testimony by a lot of people right now and stuff, but that's how you get things done. So if they have a passion, they want to get involved, there's things out there and stuff. I mean, they just reach out to NGAW at NGAW.org and send an email to them and say, hey, this is what I'm thinking about out there. I might have a problem and stuff too. And the other thing I think they need to understand too on the enlisted side for both officer and enlisted, one of our biggest programs is our We Care for America program, which is our National Guard relief organization. We are the only relief organization out there for the Guard. Army Emergency Relief, the Air Force Relief Association does nothing for Title 32 people.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. And we do officers enlisted and stuff. There's a lot of Washington Guard people. I think 20-something got grants or loans this year and stuff. And since COVID, we've probably given away almost $4 million in student loans and grants out there and stuff. So it's a big, big program. So we're always touting that program out there that we're willing to support no matter what.
Yeah. So I think as we're kind of wrapping up, something, you know, I would love to give every retiree the chance to tell those folks in the uniform, right, that are either day one of serving and they're looking at this as, oh, my gosh, I got a long way to go, or that person that's right at the end of their career and they're hitting 20 years, 25 years. What's that message you want to tell them about?
Well, I think first serving, when you first walk through the door and that stuff going through there, nobody ever thinks, most people don't think they're going to make it a career, right? You're going to kick the tires, see what this is going to go through, and next thing. The next thing you know, you might re-enlist again and stuff going through there. And again, and the next thing you know, you're at your 20 years, you're at your 30 years, whatever you're doing, before you know, it is that thing and that stuff going through there. And I think what people need to understand, the younger ones, that this becomes your family. I think it's the biggest networking opportunity in the world that you need to take advantage of, of all those benefits and stuff going through there. And I always tell people, too, why am I still doing what I do? I always believe I've received more from this career and that stuff than I'm able to give back now. So I wish the retiree community would get more involved in stuff and giving back and that stuff going out there, and how we bridge that gap and get them involved, because we used to be involved many years ago in that stuff. And I think there's still an opportunity for them to be used and stuff out there. But for all those still growing and stuff, you always take an advantage. And while you're in this career, take a risk.
Yeah.
Take a risk. Go do something different and stuff like that. You know, going through the risk I took moving, for one thing, uprooting my entire family out there was one. But, you know, and there's other opportunities within the Washington Guard. It might not be a job you're familiar with, but it's going through. And one of those examples was, you know, I was being an AGR and you're in a career field and that stuff going out there. You kind of cap out a career. I'm a combat engineer. There was no combat engineer E9 positions, some other things. So you need to get work networked. You need to get known and out there and stuff out there. And I had some senior mentors out there looking out for me, too. So the mentorship is key for the Guard and your success out there and seeking those people out. And one of them said, hey, there's going to be an opportunity to go work in a G3 shop as the land and ammo manager and all that stuff in the G3 and that stuff, you know. But it gets you down there, gets you known. You take that risk and go to Olympia and work down here at Camp Murray and stuff out there and working out there. And I was living in Cedar Woolley. So for about 18 months, I was driving back and forth a lot of miles and stuff doing that. Yeah, but that paid off in getting my opportunity to let everybody else know what I'm capable of as a person, that stuff out there as an individual. And that's why I was able to make E9 and that stuff out there. So you got to take some of those risks, but out there in your career, but it'll be rewarding and stuff out there. So
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I appreciate you coming on, Bob. I've known you a very long time. I mean, my wife still raves about having worked with you. I mean, you watched my daughter grow up as a small little baby, and now she's 5 years old. I appreciate you coming on and joining us and sharing your story.
Oh, thank you. Anytime.
Yeah.
Anything we can do.
If you like the video, make sure to give it a like. If you're a Washington Guard retiree and you're interested in joining us, let us know. Throw a comment in the chat and we'll reach out to you and subscribe for future videos. Hey, thanks, Bob.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
What drove you to run for president, Angus?
Well, it's kind of my mantra, my theme this year is, why not me? Why not now?